This is How to Kill a Piano. My name is George Tate. Welcome back. I know it's been a while. Thanks for all of your kind reviews that you've left. I know it's been like 2 years since we've done this, but you know what? Life got in the way. I was doing some professional voiceover work as well, but I'm back on task and finishing up and reading this story. Hey, it's free. And that one reviewer who said, yet another unfinished story, 2 stars. Well, be patient. One of the realities of human nature is that we define our lives by restrictions. We define ourselves by what we can't do. One of the functions of a magician is to say, well, maybe we can. Max Maven. Chapter 20, Halloween Morning. It's Halloween morning. The sun creeps up over the rooftops, dancing shadows through the morning air. I'm woken by the sun's rays creeping through the cracks in the curtains hanging over the basement windows. As the sun begins to wash my face, I sit up in Charlie's chair next to the radio that we spent hours listening to together. The night of rest was the kind that you get where you don't even remember sleeping. There were no dreams or nightmares to recall as I took comfort in being surrounded by Charlie's open notebooks. I loved being surrounded in his sketches, his poetry and prose. I was surprised to discover in my lap one of his journals open to a page that read, I am overjoyed with sorrow and it's a privilege to miss you. I've been shaped through trauma and my experiences. I would only trade all of that pain and regret that's inside me if I could still remain the person that I've become today. The problem with entertaining that trade is that without those truths and experiences, it would make it easier to slip into a person that I might despise. Charlie really had a way with words. I turned the page. We hardly knew what we were doing, and yet we knew we loved one another. The raven at my back scratches dull claws that run through my dry, white, flaky skin. It's all gonna catch up to me one day. Scritius, my dear friend, I am not your enemy. We hardly knew what we were doing. Our former selves failed to train us to fight the darkness that Cordiva challenges us with day after day. Every bit of information I uncover seems to lead to more questions. I can't help but think everyone knows more about where Charlie could be, except me. The next entry was dated 88 years later. There was nothing in between. It was a poem titled, Oh Well, Everything Changes. It hasn't happened in a while. Right hand bends at knuckles, twists pencils around razors. Photographs hit the whitewash screen at the back of my mind. Like nails pounded through my wrists, liquid overflows, blood rushes to my ears and darkens my lips. My mouth salivates with color, tongues dipped in verbal cotton candy, yellow, orange, teeth stained with blue, green. Drool drips down my chin, between what's usually black and white of lips, too chapped to let saliva glide through. Left hand, fingertips, twinkle framed flaked skin opens my black book. Scribbled with sweat and oil. This is my Bible. This old atheist's childhood. Memories ripping through these pages. Then 17 facing the 7-year-old battered child. Inside with stolen virginity and molested skin. I slowly wrote out my secrets, leaking them into the world, to overcome them, to remember them as they slowly slip away. In these pages, I've explored love, what it's like to lose, and what it's like to live. This is my Bible. This is my being. My beginning, my end, the now, where you imprint onto me, poets on poets, people on people. Through pain, tears, sweat, and dirt, we become something extraordinary. Like Walt Whitman's poem, Miracles, where he paints the world and manages to make the word or sound beautiful 11 times. I'm the monster, the scapegoat, the boy mothers loved but grew to hate, transformed with teenage fears, 18-year-old, 9-month mentality. Mother never heard the right answers, never asked a thing, but I'll always be willing to talk, to write, to love, because I'm really just a poem. It hasn't happened in a while when a poem simmers butterflies in the pit of stomach, tickles around my spine, and I believe in a poet who once sang that loving a poem is like loving a lover, and having a lover is like loving a poem. Trisha Appertson. It imprints heartbeats, skin tingles with every drop of sound that's whispered into my ears. Stripped bare, truth may be easier to find in raw form. Poetry kisses my eyes, her words dip and rise, float circles round her backflips and handstands. In these pages, poetry's helped me overcome my sexuality, helped shed my skin, confront fear of falling back to my 7-year-old mentality, and we are poetry, and it hasn't happened for a while. Poetry's locked away, escaping to adulthood where the truth likes to hide. I had my face buried in poetry's arms, and I couldn't breathe because I held my breath. Dying, she's birthed me 1,000 times. This is our Bible, our future, our dreams. A soliloquy of cool rain falling on our face as poetry innocently holds hands and doesn't have to hide it. Eventually, all of the ink and sweat will fade, and all we'll have left is her residue. Imprints of poets on poets, people on people. And something extraordinary that we will always carry with us. My fingers lingered over Charlie's words, tracing the page as I began digesting the poem. I fought back the tears in my eyes. Why this poem? Why this moment? Why those words? Why have you left me, Charlie? I turned my growing anger to the piano as tears started to run down my face. What did you do to Charlie? What are you doing to me? Why won't you talk to me? Can't you take me instead? I slammed my fists down on the keys with a chaotic glissando. A dark, shaggy figure that had been lurking on all fours beneath the musical beast started to howl from beneath. I quickly leapt away from the keys, slamming the cover of the piano keys shut with a loud snap. It was Sharon. I didn't mean to scare you, Sharon reassured, their nails clicking against the tile floor of the basement rhythmically as they cautiously approached me on all fours. And while I was startled, I wasn't surprised to find them here. How do you do that? I questioned, wiping the tears from my face. How do you get in here so easily? Sharon cleared their throat. All of our libraries are connected. It allows all of us to not only travel to each other, but to share the knowledge that we spend our lifetimes collecting. That means none of you have any real privacy, I pondered out loud. We can only come by when the passage is left open. Charlie must have left the door unlocked. Sharon's fur faded as they slowly stood on their hind legs. The fur melted away from around their face as they shaped into their human form. I wasn't sure who to trust. I certainly wasn't sure if Sharon was my friend or manipulating the whole situation. So, I asked a favor. Sharon, I need to meet the seer. Will you take me? Will you set up a first meeting? Well, Sharon stretched their arms above their head as they yawned. It won't exactly be your first meeting. What? I asked, confused. You've met him before. On the very same day I met you, in fact. Sharon ran their hand through their long, dark hair, brushing it back away from their eyes, finishing their transformation to human form. I caught myself staring. I don't think I'm ever going to get used to you changing like that. That's not a bad thing, though I suspect you'll grow into it, Sharon smirked. Wait, I don't remember anyone else in the alley when we met. No, you and I met many years before then. You may have been too small to remember either one of us. Who? Wait, who was where? I stammered. It was at that body of water where I first found you. The one that was too large to be considered a pond, yet too small to be considered a lake. He didn't have his coins of passage, so he was destined to stay in the in-between, and liked it so much, he decided to stay. In truth, he's been there for a long time. And at the same time, he's always been. He goes by Harold these days. I'm happy to take you to him, but I'm not sure what answers you seek that he will be willing to provide. Well, he's a seer, right? He sees everything. You know, I'm no idiot. I've been reading these books all night. He should have some answers on where to find Charlie. I just don't want you to get your hopes up, kid. Kid? That's not what I see when I look in the mirror. I gestured at my aged appearance. Sharon barked back. Just because your physical form has changed doesn't mean the rest of you has to. Well, maybe it's time I grow into this body. Take me to him, please, I begged. As you wish, George. As you wish. He'll be expecting us. I knew it! You already planned to take me, I said, thinking I caught them in something. No, but it's difficult to surprise a seer once you've committed to going to visit. Grab your keys. You're driving. Don't you have a secret passage or magic spell to get us there? Isn't that what these passageways are for? I mean, he's expecting us. The door will be unlocked, right? Everything's connected? Kind of. The in-between works a bit differently. Most people who go there have to be one of us, dead or on their way into a new life. You are neither dead, dying, or working on being born. We walked out to Charlie's car, and Sharon hopped in the back seat. For fuck's sake, Sharon, I'm not a taxi. I surprised myself as those words came out of my mouth. And I am not your personal tour guide. Seatbelt, please. I closed the door, and the seatbelt whirled into place. Can you please sit in the front? I'd rather not have anything behind me while I'm driving. Where exactly are we going? I need to be back before this evening. I reached down to click my lap belt into place as Sharon clicked theirs on in the back, committed to staying put. What could be more important that would need such urgency? It's Halloween, Sharon. I wasn't about to mention Scrutius or Absinthe until I knew Sharon was really on my side of the battlefield. Roll down the windows, George. After we get to where we're headed, you'll have appreciated the fresh air. Oh, and put the car in neutral and lock the doors. Sharon wrapped the shoulder belt around their left wrist and tightened their grip around the top near the frame of the door. How exactly are we traveling, Sharon? Down, Sharon retorted frankly. Down? I questioned. I felt a vibration start in the steering wheel. Then the entire car began to shake. The concrete opened up beneath us, and the car began a free fall, throwing itself forward as if it was being driven off a cliff. Sharon, wait! 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 You son of a bitch! Sharon calmly scolded over the top of my panic. You've grown quite the mouth in your old age, kid. Hang on to something. We'll be there soon. As the wheels scraped past the last of the concrete and we fell into a free fall, we became weightless, and the earth around us started to spin in slow motion. I saw earthworms tunneling through between the roots of the trees around our house. The root systems looked like serpents large enough to envelop the car, like a reticulated python. I couldn't help but contemplate if I was falling to my death. Some people play their entire lives as the same person. Others live several different lifetimes in the space of one. I can't imagine how many lifetimes Charlie has lived or how many different kinds of people he's been. I couldn't help but think I was never going to get that opportunity to make those kind of choices myself. I caught Sharon's reflection in the side mirror as they stuck their head out the window, letting the air filter through their thick, long brown hair, blowing it into a mess as we continued to fall. Relax! Try to enjoy it, Sharon panted. Gripping the steering wheel tighter, I watched my knuckles turn different shades of white. I am so relaxed, I said through clenched teeth as the air forced through the windows, whipping my hair all over my face. I closed my eyes as tight as I could. Look at me. I'm just falling towards my death with a shape-shifting piece of shit. George, Sharon cooed, you're being an overdramatic child. Sharon, you're the one who told me not to grow up, I snapped back. I could taste my stomach in my throat. Open your eyes, George. It's Halloween. Enjoy the fall before it freezes over. I do love Halloween. It's the best of all the holidays. Not only do you get to dress up as Frankenstein or whatever superhero is in that year, you get to go trick-or-treating and get a bucket load of candy. Most of the year, adults are telling you to be careful of strangers and not rot your teeth with all that sugar, but on Halloween, all of those rules disappear. They send you to knock on random people's doors and let you stay up eating more sweets than you usually get in months. I admit, I was always in favor of staying home to decorate with Uncle Charlie and jump scare those who dared set foot on our front stoop. What is my brain doing? Am I going insane? I contemplated as I tried to manually roll up the driver's side window. You're not insane. It's just the lack of oxygen flowing into your head as we fall. It affects most people's train of thought. You get used to it after a dozen trips or so. The suspension of the car bounced as it came to an abrupt stop, landing on a sandy beach. There was nothing but sand and water for miles. It was dark. The air tasted like stale bagels. The sand circled all around us, and the water rippled reflections of the moon, disguising the line where it kissed the sky. I pushed the driver's side door open, and the seatbelt didn't budge, pinning me in. Sharon leaped through the window and rolled in the sand. I wriggled my way out of the restraints, my ass hitting the sandy ground. I was not pleased. Sharon, on the other hand, was thrilled. We made it. You made it in one piece. That's a first. I'm impressed. You're further along than we thought. Welcome to the in-between, George. All of a sudden, Sharon was acting like a fucking golden retriever or a golden doodle. If I haven't lost my mind, Sharon most certainly has. Is it always like this here? I asked, standing myself up and feeling my shoes sink back into the sand. Sharon chuckled. Yeah, The in-between is not exactly a pleasant place to be. It's a limbo of sorts, where those who are neither living nor dead reside. I looked around and saw nothing but water and sand. There was no sign of any kind of dwelling or structure, and no sign of anyone else here but Sharon and me. "Where is he? I don't see anything around here," I said. "You don't find a seer by looking. Nothing here is bound by the physical world in the same way we are. The seer exists in a different realm." "I thought we were in a different realm. What does that mean? How do we find him then?" "We don't have to find him. He'll find us." As if on cue, a gust of wind picked up and the sand stirred beneath our feet. Seagulls appeared in the sky, flying overhead in a V formation. The water began to ripple as the beach came to life. "What time is it? I really need to be back before 10. "Time? Don't worry about time here," Sharon advised. "Wait." "No need to wait, George. I said don't worry about time here," Sharon insisted. "That's not what I mean. Did you say the only way here without being one of your kind is by being birthed or by being dead?" "You were paying attention." Sharon clapped their paws together. "I owe Sarah 5 Athenian dollars." The sand continued to swirl at our feet, forming a long, tall staff next to Sharon. It towered over both of us. They grabbed hold and a shiny blade grew out of the tip, forming a sharp-edged arc. "Am I dead?" I queried nervously. "Are you going to kill me?" "Don't be ridiculous, George. If you were dead, how could I possibly kill you? You're as alive as anything else around here." "That's not comforting." "It wasn't meant to be. But he's meant to be." Holding the newly formed scythe in their hand, Sharon nodded towards the water that was too large to be considered a pond, yet too small to be considered a lake, where at its very center, floating on a small neon pink pool raft, laid Harold, basking in the moonlight in his brown three-piece suit, with a large black hard-covered book draped over his face as the water gently rocked him in slumber. The tips of the waves crashed gently into the soles of his brown Oxford wingtips. I felt a chill down my spine as I looked out onto the water. "Well, come on. I believe introductions are in order." Sharon grabbed me by the back of my shirt collar between their teeth and dragged me into the water. I felt it fill me as my chest tensed, trying to cough it out of my lungs. "Don't concern yourself with trying to breathe," Sharon advised while keeping my shirt clenched tightly in their jaw, dragging me closer to where Harold's raft bobbed like a water buoy. "There's nothing here to breathe. Water, sand, air, it's all the same. You needn't bother swimming if you don't wish to, George. Stop flailing about. Stand up." It was at this moment that I realized Sharon wasn't in the water, but rather they were walking on top of it. I placed my hands palm down on top of the water's surface and attempted to push myself out, my legs struggling under the water's surface tension as I rolled myself above the waterline. I saw the seer laying there on his raft, stiff as a dead man. "Doesn't that feel better?" Sharon asked, dusting some of the dry sand off my shirt. "Sharon," I said, composing myself, "explain this one thing to me. If the sand, air, and water are all the same, how are you dusting sand off my shirt, but not dusting water?" "Kid, it's best not to overthink things, especially down here." I glared into Sharon's eyes for a moment before stating, "You get a special satisfaction out of answers like that, don't you?" It was true. Sharon did, but wouldn't give me the satisfaction of admitting it. The seer's voice boomed over ours, interrupting the awkward moment between us. "Don't set impossible tasks for yourself, and you won't need to ask impossible questions." I turned to look down at the pool float that was now less than a foot from my feet. The body floating on the raft lay still. His mouth held a motionless smirk. I could sense a powerful aura emanating from the figure and felt a mixture of awe and fear. "Harold," Sharon called out in a sing-song voice, "we've come to seek your guidance." Harold snickered menacingly. The body stayed motionless. The smirk on his face didn't budge an inch. "I'm sorry. I didn't realize we were so close. Are you the seer?" I asked nervously. Sharon piped in with introductions. "George, this is Harold T. Resius. Harold, you already know George, no doubt. I feel silly introducing you to anyone. Please accept my apologies for being a little bit behind schedule." I felt another shiver tickle down my spine. "You are neither late nor early. You've arrived exactly when you were expected to, exactly as you've been written into the fabric of our timelines." Harold reached up and closed the book, revealing a face that wasn't exactly human. I could see two silver dollars resting loosely over each of his otherwise empty eye sockets as he sat up. His skin looked like it was made from obsidian. The pink raft jiggled like jello beneath him as he turned to address me. "Harold," Sharon called out, "we've come to seek your guidance." "Sharon," Harold hissed, interrupting, "that's enough. Allow me to save you some breath. You're both here in search of Charlie, his Uncle Charlie." The coins in Harold's eyes seemed to glow at the mention of Charlie's name. Charlie, he said. "A being of many names and faces. He's been a thorn in my side for many centuries." "Can you help me find him?" I asked eagerly. Harold tilted his head, as if considering my request. "I can, but at a price." "What price?" I asked warily. Harold's lips curved back into a wicked smile. "It's a price to be paid, not to me, but to yourself." "What price?" "Your soul." I don't have a soul." "Well, if you're not using it, you won't mind the agreement." I guess you're right. Or this is a really bad idea." I nervously eyed Sharon, who nodded back at me in encouragement. "Okay, it's all yours." Harold reached up toward the glowing coins in his eyes and slipped a fingernail behind the pure silver coin covering his left eye socket and scraped the skin from around it, pulling it out of his flesh, exposing the cavity beneath it. Harold scraped the dead skin off the sides of the coin, held it out at his fingertips, and brought it out towards my chest. "This might sting a little," Harold warned. My body stiffened as I prepared myself and took a deep breath. Sharon winced. "Harold, come on, really? Must you do the eye thing?" Harold suddenly dropped the coin, and it fell into the water, blending with the surface on impact. His shoulders relaxed. I thought it was a nice dramatic touch. Harold and Sharon broke into fits of giggles, like two best friends laughing at an inside joke that they'd been telling for years. I opened my eyes. "Sorry, I couldn't keep that up very long. Don't worry, your soul, or lack thereof, is safe and secure. There's no price. I'm happy to help." "What?" I said, confused. "You should have seen the look on your face," Sharon heckled. "What are you talking about?" "You actually believed I was going to take your soul." "Look, never mind all of that. Uncle Charlie, well, we had a nice chat and a cup of tea earlier." "Wait, for real? Or is this another Athenian prank? Are you even the seer? Sharon, what is this bullshit? We're wasting time." Harold placed his hands on my shoulders, and I instantly calmed down. "I am the seer," Harold said matter-of-factly. "If I know where Charlie is, I am going to tell you that I know, but that I regret I cannot divulge that information to you. You're going to protest, and I'll attempt to comfort you with enlightenment. I'll explain that Charlie is a figment of our own imaginations. You're going to ask what that means, and I'll explain that Charlie doesn't exist any more than you or I exist. None of us are real. You are no more a figment of my imagination than I am of yours. Everything that we're made of, our hobbies, our secret desires, the things we're most ashamed of, but still do anyway. The entire makeup of ourselves is simply an idea that someone wrote down one day. That's all Charlie is. That's all you are. An idea. Who we are beyond those ideas and conceptions. Beyond our memories, beyond our thoughts, our reflections and predictions. Well, that's yet to be determined. It's our awareness, the pure awareness that flows through every inch of our being that makes up our true nature. That's who we really are. Consciousness and life are intertwined together, illusion or not. With our memory and sensations, everything that constitutes our identity would be gone. I'm going to be honest with you, I have no idea what any of that means. Harold patted me on the head. Don't fear being without Charlie. If you let this consume you, it will kill any semblance of joy that is left within you. Even the happiest of moments can be clouded with despair, with worry and confusion. Now, this is where you usually tell me that you're desperate to have a positive experience and without Charlie, you can't. You think it's impossible. Wanting any positive experience is a negative experience, George. Learning to accept and embrace a negative experience creates a positive experience and will settle your mind and body. I don't know why I'm wasting my breath. You never hear it. If Charlie is gone, you need to let yourself grieve. If Charlie were to come back, you then need to look inside yourself to forgive him for leaving. Love him either way. Accept and embrace and set yourself free. Told you he was good, Sharon remarked, twirling the scythe around in circles above their head. Can you tell us where he is? Is he okay? I asked urgently. He is not in danger, if that is what you're asking. But he is not where you can reach him, Harold replied. What does that mean? Can you take us to him or not? I asked. I'm afraid that is not possible. Charlie has chosen his path, and he must walk it alone. But he's my friend. He's like my dad. I can't just leave him there, I protested. I understand your concern, George, but sometimes we must let those we care about make their own decisions, even if we don't agree with them. So that's it. There's nothing we can do? I asked, feeling defeated. I didn't say that. There's always something that can be done, but it may not be the solution you're looking for. Then what is it? What can I do? What can we do? I asked, feeling a glimmer of hope. You must find the thread. The thread that leads to Charlie's path. Pull on it and decide for yourself if you're willing to follow that path that leads to the end of the rope. Harold advised. Where is this thread? How do I find it? I asked eagerly. You've already been invited to see it. It's best you meet them alone. I would say you didn't need to seek my guidance as you've been doing fine on your own, but this meeting... was inevitable. The seance? Harold nodded. You will know the thread when you see it, but be warned, once you take hold of it, there may be no coming back. That's a decision you need not make lightly. Understand it, for it is as much of your future as it is Charlie's. Harold said ominously. I don't trust them, I concluded. Take it from an expert, Harold said, gesturing towards the coins that appeared back in his eye sockets. You shouldn't trust anyone blindly. It's time to get back to my work. Harold reclined back into the pool float and began thumbing through the large black book before draping it back over his face. Everything began to fade away, and we found ourselves standing back on the shore near the car. Sure, I understand, I said into the empty space sarcastically. Thanks for all of your generous help, I screamed. Feeling scared and defeated, I collapsed to my knees into the sand. Sharon placed a hand on my shoulder but said nothing. Sharon, how do we even get back home? I asked, feeling a sudden panic. Just close your eyes and imagine being home. The in-between will take care of the rest. But Charlie feels like home. He is home. I looked up at Sharon, feeling overwhelmed by everything that had just happened. Let's go find that thread, they said. We'll do whatever it takes to find Charlie. I promise you that. That concludes another chapter of How to Kill a Piano. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm George Tate. When is the next time, you ask? Well, very, very soon, as our story is quickly barreling towards its end. So until next time, enjoy yourself. And if you can't enjoy yourself, enjoy someone else with their consent. That's the key.